Hey folks, we're skewing the intro music and the usual stuff. We just want to straight up welcome you to Taking It Down. We're back. I'm the editor-in-chief of the website, The Alabama Take. My name's Blaine Duncan. We took a bit of a two-week break, hopefully to allow for the voices of the protest to be heard more clearly, specifically the voices of our Black brothers and sisters who have not been heard enough. I think I can speak for my co-host at the moment and let everyone else who's been on the podcast as well, I can speak for them and everyone who contributes and writes for the Alabama Take to say we support the Black Lives Matter and the movement for change that goes along with it. If there's more that we personally can do, or if we aren't doing something correctly, we want to know. We want to grow from this. The Alabama Take website is where this podcast originated, has always tried to be open and an open place for discussion of pop culture, sports culture, and occasionally politics. You'll see some things like that on the website. We welcome all, though. And in truth, our voices aren't varied enough on the Alabama Take. But if you need a platform to help lift what you have to say or the voice of the underrepresented, please reach out to us at our website. You can find us at any of our social media accounts, or you can email us. We would love to offer you a place to say anything. Also, I encourage you to support the causes that are helping this change come about, such as the NAACP Legal Defense Fund, Campaign Zero is a good one, and any others. In fact, there's a great comprehensive list from New York Magazine that I'll post in the show notes that you can click on and see if any of them are places you'd like to donate time or money. You can pick and choose, and hopefully you can help in that way as well. Or join a protest if there's one near you. I think this is we at the Alabama Take, and I think this is a good change that's happening for our country, a positive change. But if you're pretty quick on the draw, the website is www.thecut.com, and then you can search on there, George Floyd protest, how to help, and that'll get you there. But I'm going to bring in our co-host, Adam Morrow, and is there anything you'd like to add to the discussion?
No, it's good to be back talking with you. It felt right to take some time off and hopefully just not clog up the social media feed. It's a shame that we're taping this today is Monday, June 15th, and it seems like there were still a lot of protests over the weekend, or they're still ongoing, but they're not maybe getting the same bandwidth from media sources or from the common social media outlet. All that stuff is still going on out there. There's still ways to get involved, ways to help. Look on the local level, see what's happening in your neighborhood. Get involved. Hear somebody else other than, you know, me and Blaine here can be an echo chamber to each other. Step outside that kind of little world. I don't know, heady times we're living in.
It is. And, you know, we are two white guys, and I posted this on our social media account. We're two white guys who just talk movies and TV and music a little and a little books on occasion. So our opinion right now isn't the most important. So we definitely wanted to pause that. And you know, we can always get back and talk into TV shows and movies and stuff. But you said it correctly. We just didn't want to clog up the feed of anyone's timeline on social media. And the more important stuff was out there. Yeah.
Not to venture out onto that shaky limb of like white person recommending things to.
Right.
Like, yeah. Understood. But there have been, I happen to be reading Beloved by Toni Morrison when this all started, and the timing was very interesting. Felt cosmic in a way, if you want to use phrases like that. But I don't know, any means that we have to listen to voices other than folks who look and think like us, now is the time. And that's maybe the power of the things that we usually talk about, is getting out of our own mindset or our own skin, for lack of a better word, and kind of seeing a different perspective.
You know, we're not a political podcast, and not really a cultural podcast in that sense. Pop culture, yes, and how it affects and mirrors culture, but we're much more movies, television, music, and stuff like that. But speaking of books, though, there was a lot of attention drawn to the book White Fragility, and I forget the author. That's horrible of me, I know, but I know she's a socialist, if I'm not. No, I said that completely wrong. She is not a socialist. I shouldn't put that in her mouth. She's a sociologist. There.
That makes more sense. Although we're all socialists these days, right?
Yeah. Probably so.
Robin DiAngelo is the author of that book.
Yeah. So I had read that back in November, I think. And it's a challenging book. It challenges the notions of things I have believed or thought, perhaps. I guess I haven't clung to many of those things. But, you know, at times I thought to myself when I picked it up that, oh, I'll agree with 100% of this book. This will be a breeze and it'll go down easy. But it did shake me on occasion. So I encourage, if you're wanting to learn and grow and have something, not just be a mirror, that's an okay book. And it will, you know, there'll be a times I imagine it'll be, I don't want to say offensive, but it'll rattle you, I think, a little. So,
which is a healthy thing.
It's a healthy thing. It's okay. You know, nobody says that. I often tell my students, we're not reading this necessarily for you to agree with it. It's just to encounter it. And but in this case, you might want to agree with some of her points. But I'll let you, the listener, take care of that. That's one that I have definitely read that is really getting a lot of attention. There's a couple more that I've read that got a lot of attention, but my mind's kind of blanking on that now. But anyway, yeah.
I know Just Mercy is one that has been circulating.
Yeah. My wife, I think, is a big fan of that book, and that's a good one. Also an Alabama-based book.
Yeah, there's a movie too, right, that's on, I think it's on Amazon Prime at the moment, or maybe just Amazon to watch for free.
That's correct. I mean,
it's, on the one hand, once you start, this is kind of, it reminds me of The Wire. You know, like The Wire, when they start tugging at this little string, a lot of stuff starts falling behind it, right? Like when you want to address drugs, like all of a sudden the problem becomes much larger. You want to address police brutality. This is a long way to say all of these sites like Amazon Prime and Netflix and all of these things are putting together really useful collections of documentaries and films, or like fiction films, dramas, maybe to help get out of our own experience. Yet they're also, I don't know, Amazon's not exactly blowing the doors off of social justice most of the time. So it's a complex thing.
So that's what we have to say. That's why we were away for 2 weeks. We have gone weekly, but we took a couple weeks off, and we hope that allowed for everyone to be able to express themselves and to learn more about the Black Lives Matter movement and some of those other social issues that are thoroughly entrenched in race. Okay. And you know, and I'm still learning, absolutely. And I don't want to speak for Adam, but you know, we're both, I imagine, still learning and trying to grow, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And like I said in the intro, I think now is not the time to feel like something has happened and it is past, you know, mm-hmm. Like our foot has to stay on the gas with all of these issues. I don't know, as much as COVID has frustrated me in terms of people's reaction to it, and it still does every day. I'm like, how Alabama, it's on the rise. We still have to be very careful about that and conscientious. But it has been encouraging the number of conversations I've seen about just a word like, or a phrase like systematic racism, you know, from the hardcore conservative Alabama. You know, the South is so complex, I think, maybe because we have had to live with, I mean, it's easy to pretend like it hasn't, the civil rights was 100 years ago and it had no bearing on our life. You know, I grew up in the 90s, that it was ancient history, according to school, which is just not true. But for a lot of people having to confront, you know, they'll say, well, I work with people of all races. I have friends of all races, but understanding that it's bigger than that. The number of people I've seen kind of go through that process, and, you know, I'm sure me and you both evaluating our own upbringing, the things that have worked for us so far in life, that maybe we know it's not a level playing field, but just how far that goes. I can take heart by how many people that I did not expect to be having those conversations are jumping in and kind of doing some uncomfortable work. I don't know. I was encouraged by that. But we got to keep going.
Yeah. We got to keep going in terms of where this movement is going, right?
Yeah, we keep digging, and if you can address that, hey, maybe it's kind of cooked into the system to be unfair or even predatory towards some people, keep pulling that string. Where else does that go?
Right. I think the George Floyd murder, I'll call it a murder because it's what it was. I think the George Floyd murder and the most recent murder of the gentleman whose last name is Brooks in Atlanta, I feel like those two murders opened the eyes of people on why Colin Kaepernick was kneeling.
Yeah.
That's what I'm hoping, and I'm getting the vibe from some people that they're starting to set to connect the dots rather than just saying, don't disrespect the flag, which is bullshit. Okay. Yeah,
absolute bullshit. I mean, I think one thing that I've seen is people who want to understand everything in like binary ways. And when I'll say black and white, meaning obviously not racially, but there's good and there's evil, there's right and there's wrong. And it's so much more complex than that. Like that way of thinking is just, I don't know, flummoxed by the world around it right now, because they so badly want the flag to mean, you know, to your hand over your heart, respect the flag, all these kind of things. But it's more complicated than that now. It always has been. It's just, if you were able to live that way, it was privilege, you know? I think of folks like Drew Brees, who, you know, came out and made his statement that, you know, it still meant something to him, the flag, it's disrespectful, all this thing, and backtracked. And a lot of people gave him crap about that he was just bowing to PC culture. You know, if you're like a hardcore conservative, oh, you just bow down to the liberals, that's what they want. It's kind of like to borrow their crude phrase, the pussification of America, all these things. Like, well, you know, even if he realized that he wasn't gonna, I don't know, sell as much merchandise because he said that thing and he changed his mind, or if somebody got in his ear and he's correcting behavior but not his heart, I don't know. I'm not here to judge him. I'm just saying, if all of those things, you know, King said, you can't legislate somebody's heart, but you can at least stop them from killing you, you know? And it's obviously a more nuanced thing with, say, like the kneeling for the flag issue. But if you get people to understand these small things, maybe behavior and thought patterns change eventually. I don't know. I'm trying to be optimistic here.
And there's this whole video that went around and has starting to circulate again about Kaepernick, who he went from sitting on the bench to kneeling because of a conversation with someone involved in the armed forces.
It was a Green Beret, right? Or special forces of some sort, like the kind of like the alpha hero of these stand for the flag, conservative kind of types. And what was funny is I've seen people say, like, well, if I had known his whole reasoning the whole time, I never would have had a problem with it. It's like, how did you miss that? You willfully, what are we all willfully ignorant of, you know, when we see something divisive like that? I'm sure I'm guilty of it too.
Oh, yeah.
On the other side, but I don't know. You just want to shake people and be like, man, this is, he's been in his community doing the work. He had solid reasoning for what he did. Frustrating. Equally frustrating too. We talked about three black men, but Breonna Taylor, her killers are still at large and still on the force, you know, and that just doesn't sit right. I don't know. It's all some of the rallies that I've been to, the black women get up and say, you know, we matter too. This is the,
oh yeah.
It's such a, you know, to say any experience is monolithic is obviously false, right? We all are individuals with individual lives and nuance and how different. I don't know. Just to say Black Lives Matter is this big umbrella, but there's so much underneath that we have to learn about.
And there's still some people out there who don't understand that phrase. I still see people on my social media feed who do not grasp the meaning of Black Lives Matter. They think that is somehow taking a shit on their life, their white life.
Yeah, they do.
Yeah, if that confuses you, I encourage you to go to Netflix, and this is a little bit lighter way of getting your information, but go to Michael Che's special on Netflix, and he has this bit where he says, he just wrestles comedically with the phrase Black Lives Matter, and he said that's just that's the starting point. That's where we're starting. Black lives, they matter. And it's hilarious and true. He breaks it down well. There are other places that will break down that phrase for you. It is obviously, you've heard it over and over. You don't need to hear it from me. It is not saying no other lives matter. It's saying that Black lives have not been treated the same in this country and a lot of countries. They just haven't been treated the same. Okay.
I mean, I think about here locally in the Shoals, they're still Confederate or a Confederate monument in front of the courthouse and like the trying to explain to people. And I grew up in Tuscaloosa, and definitely some racism and some problems in that town. But I don't know, the whole, we've talked about this a bit, not on the show, but the whole like Confederate heritage thing seems a lot stronger in North Alabama, that you can be maybe not proud of slavery, but you know, your great, 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 whatever grandfather, he was just a good Southern boy defending his home, all this kind of stuff. And these people just cannot understand what's wrong with having a Confederate monument in front of a courthouse, which is, should be the ultimate blind justice for American citizens place. You know, and you walk in and you see this thing that represents, and not only it went up in the time of segregation and Jim Crow, but it represents fighting to keep slaves. I don't understand. And that's a lot of all lives matter, like just kind of say, get over it, move forward. It's in the past, whatever. We get riled up on this. I mean,
I don't even think we're quite finished yet. So if this is hurting your ears, you may just want to unsubscribe to us anyway, but if this is hurting your ears, you may want to hit the fast forward. But I got a few more points to make. Some good news. So the Supreme Court ruled today, we record on Monday, the Supreme Court ruled today that you cannot lose your job just because you are gay, trans, queer, you know, the LGBT community. And that's good.
That's wonderful. That's great.
And I was just going to attach the Black Lives Matter movement, I think I've noticed this week, is starting to gain momentum with Black trans lives matter as well, you know.
Yeah.
And because you were talking about Breonna Taylor and how the these women are standing up and saying, don't, you know, we are part of the Black Lives Matter movement. We are Black ladies. We are, you know, we're shit on. And that needs to change. And yeah. One thing that white fragility taught me, or re-emphasized, or maybe taught, I'll stick with taught, was that racism, my definition of racism, or white people's definition of racism, may not be what we think it is. Growing up, to be racist was just not giving someone a job because they're Black, or using the N-word would be an extreme example. That's not necessarily racism. I mean, it is for sure, but that's not necessarily the racism that I am contributing to. So you may have to change your definition. I have to change my definition of racism. It is being at ease and getting advantages because I'm white, and being able to take advantage of a certain system just because I am white, and you know, also ignoring the fact that people of color do not get these same opportunities.
Yeah, and that's it. And I know it frustrates people to have the goalposts moved. You know, like if you go back in time, just not very far, say 6 months, and you have the people admitting, hey, there's some systematic problems here, using the word systematic racism, that would have felt extreme for say like Mitt Romney going in the street and saying Black Lives Matter. You know, like that would have felt extreme, but now that has become the new norm. And I know it frustrates people to say like, well, your heart's in the right place, but I just can't keep up with, they feel like it's like PC culture, or it's, you know, liberal progressivism run amok or whatever. It's like, well, that's just growing, right? That is,
yeah.
Like you don't expect your daughter to, once she has achieved something in life, that's it, right? Like there's a new goal. You are a developing person. We're adults, but we still have to think the same way.
Mm-hmm. What a great point, because that is I'm going to be honest and frank on the podcast. That was a moment of frustration for me 2 or 3 weeks ago. I thought to myself, okay, I'm progressive and open-minded. And then I would read something online and I would think, wait, I had achieved this goal. Don't move it away from me. Now I've got to do this. And I got a little frustrated. You know, sometimes liberals move the goalposts too fast for me. And I was complaining about that. And it's like you said, maybe that's a good thing, because I've achieved a certain amount of learning on a particular subject. So it's time to add more to it.
I don't think it's something that you're ever supposed to be like arrive at a comfortable place with, you know?
Maybe not. Maybe in 100 years we can say, you know, if... if science allows us, you and I, to live 100 more years, which I don't think it will, but, you know, maybe in 80 more years we can say, wow, we almost got here, or we're close, or yeah, whatever. That would be ideal, but I just want to say to our audience, and I bet our audience does agree with us, you know, let's listen to the Black voices.
That's the biggest thing. Just listen.
Yeah.
So ironic, yeah. I cut you off to say just listen, but
just listen. You know, Cornel West is one of my favorite guys I've been seeing on the news. I've seen him on the news for 15 years now, 20 years.
Did you see him in Tuscaloosa?
No. I didn't, and I regret it.
I was there. You know me. Amazing.
Oh, okay, good. You know me. I always avoid crowds and big gatherings, but would you like to share a little on what he had to say that evening?
Well, that was the fall of Obama's first presidential campaign. And that auditorium, I believe, was at Morgan.
So 08, right?
08, yeah, fall of 08. You know, so many people that I barely got in. And then they said, well, we're full. And so they started sending people down to sit on the stage, which had not been planned. And so he was just surrounded by people and had his little island in the middle and spoke. And it was unbelievable.
Probably because he is so entrenched in speaking from love.
Right.
He does not come at any issue, I don't think. Go find him. Go seek him out yourself. But he does not come from hate. He does not come from probably anger and righteous anger, deserved right. anger. Yeah. But never from a place of his heart or love. I just love to see him. And I always like how he calls people brother. He would, you know, if he met you and me, he would say, brother Adam, brother yeah. Blaine. And it's just so comforting. He's got a father like way of admonishing you, but still showing you love. And that's awesome.
And he's, you know, that I was in college at the time, and we talked about this a bit with normal people of being just kind of in awe of intellectuals when you encounter mm-hmm. that world for the first time and
being scared.
Yeah. But somebody like him was just so dazzling in what he could do, how fast he could move when he spoke, and it being that season of Obama about to win the election, which things were kind of at a fever pitch. I don't know. That was like seeing like a Beatle during Beatlemania or something. That sort of thing, this huge momentous occasion. I don't know, that definitely left a long, long impression. I still have the little, what do they call the pamphlet that they give out when you go to the, how am I blanking on this word? Anyway, the program from that night.
Yeah.
I still have yeah. that sitting around my desk here somewhere.
And you've also had the luxury of seeing Obama speak, right?
Yeah, and that's, I was talking to a friend last night, the difference in seeing him speak at the 50th anniversary of the Selma bridge crossing, seeing the presidential motorcade drive across that bridge the opposite direction of where John Lewis and King and all these people, you know, were beat and driven back. He drove back triumphantly the other direction in this like impressive motorcade and with security detail everywhere. Pulled up to the stage, walked up, and I just remember being struck. One, that dude is a rock star. I feel like there are very few people, I guess, in popular culture right now who could walk almost anywhere. It's almost like The Last Dance. You remember Jordan walking around wherever they were? It mm-hmm. was like the Beatles were walking through. I mean, mm-hmm. Obama's that times 10. You know, I think he could walk to any right. corner of the planet and people would react that way because there's just something about that guy. But I remember at the time thinking Selma is still a very divided place. The Black Belt has real problems. I mean, there are people within spitting distance of Selma who have raw sewage in their yard because people refuse to, I mean, they're like third world problems, you know what I mean? And people who also live on country clubs. You know, like right alongside that, and those old divisions are still very real. And you have to feel like a lot of people really resented him being there that day. And just the stones that it took. And I know that he has the best in the world working for the Secret Service, and all of this was supposed to be very secure, and there are like snipers on the roof and all this kind of stuff. But for him to walk up there and stand alone and speak to this sea of people, I thought about that bravery in that moment of that image of him at the foot of that bridge speaking, compared to our guy now who hid in the bunker at this momentous occasion. It could not be a bigger. And I don't like the guy. I don't like Trump. The whole time that they were crowding around the White House, I thought, guys, nobody go across that fence. Please don't go. But just for the sake of America, you know what I mean? And nobody needs to die on the White House lawn. Mm-hmm. It doesn't need to be violent in that situation. No, it was just very, very striking. And I've been thinking about Obama that day a lot lately.
And a lot of Black intellectuals have qualms with Obama.
Totally.
Yeah. And I get it.
And there's people who aren't happy with, the drones were working overtime.
Yeah.
There's a lot of problematic stuff, even though I think, he was my guy. I voted for him twice.
Mm-hmm.
Happily. There are glaring flaws. I saw somebody tweet today that, deifying him as being beyond reproach at mm-hmm. this moment is doing us no favors.
That's true, but it's so hard not to because of the juxtaposition of what we have now.
Well, and even the juxtaposition of the other Democratic candidates, has been, I was a big Bernie guy. Mm-hmm. I'm impressed by Liz Warren too. I think mm-hmm. they all have something to offer, but nobody managed to capture that spirit of 2006, 7, 8 of Obama.
I want to touch on one thing you brought up before we take a break, and then we'll come back and we'll talk some television, believe it or not.
Yeah.
Two things I want to bring up. First of all, you mentioned how the good old boys in and around the South who are griping about this Confederate flag stuff, mostly online. I don't, we hear them griping about it.
They didn't show up to our protests.
Good.
They stayed at home behind the keyboard.
They're the ones who claim it's heritage and stuff. I'm curious if we could gather the data, which would probably be near impossible, how many of their great-grandfathers, great-great-grandfathers went to this Civil War, at the behest of some rich slave-owning asshole who was just trying to protect their way of life. And after the end of the Civil War, even if the South had won, these great-great-grandfathers would have had to come back and live a measly existence once again. You're celebrating a heritage that you probably didn't even have a part of, or your family didn't.
Yeah.
My great-grandfather was in the Civil War. It was my grandmother's father. She said that he never spoke a word of it. I think he was kind of haunted by it. But they didn't come from plantations. They didn't come from, millions of dollars or thousands back then. It goes back to capitalism, and I just want to point that out.
The plantation owner's sons, they all had bone spurs. They didn't go.
That sounds familiar.
Yeah, I don't. That's what I was talking about with when you start pulling the strings of any situation, it all goes back to bigger problems. And mm-hmm. say talking with somebody like Lee Baines, who has spent a lot of time on this, he would point out that even whiteness is kind of a construct, right? It's a way of mm-hmm. unifying a pretty varied group of humans of different cultural heritages to just be an us and them kind of thing, right? Mm-hmm. Because that's mm-hmm. the most advantageous. If you are the guys at the top, you don't want the guys, the 90%, all getting mm-hmm. along, So how can you drive division? I don't know. That's the old trick, right?
Yes, it is. So, yeah, it's deep. We've got a lot of learning to do. We've got a lot of unraveling to do. We've got a lot of change to do. So we want to be a part of that change for the good. Let us know. And I'll wrap up this segment with one statement. To be frank, we don't have any Black writers for the Alabama Take, and it's shameful, I suppose. That's what we're in. Luckily, we've been blessed to have a trans writer. I don't care who you are. If you want to write or use our website to, get your thoughts, yeah, let me know, or let Adam know, or somebody know, and we'll get you on. We'll get you on the Alabama Take, and we'll help you get those thoughts seen and heard as much as we can on social media. We'll help boost that if you need, or let us know if you're already doing that, and we'd love to help you get that out there. Let's take a break. Let's take a break. We're going to come back on the other side and talk about HBO's show. I Know This Much Is True, which just ended this week. So we'll get back. Okay, while we take a break here, we'd like to inform you to seek out our website and our podcast called The Alabama Take. Both of those exist, thealabamatake.com, and then the podcast called The Alabama Take is on break. It's hosted by Corey Hanna, where he sits, interviews, discusses various stories with various guests from Alabama and beyond. Find that, give it a like, give it a subscription, and catch up on The Alabama Take, okay? Season 3 of that show will be back soon. No date's been announced yet, so hang on. Let's get back into it. Okay. We're back on this side of the podcast, and we're going to talk about HBO's drama limited series. It's got to be a limited series. I don't know how they could continue this, even though I haven't watched the finale. I just don't see how it could continue as a second season. They've roped in Mark Ruffalo, who's probably a hard get for television, but I Know This Much Is True. Based on the novel by Wally Lamb, it's a 6-episode limited series that is about two twin brothers. Well, obviously two, but twin brothers, both played by Mark Ruffalo, one of whom has a paranoid schizophrenic disorder. And I think this show is based around 1990 or 1991 for various reasons we could discuss. That might be a good discussion to have. And so we have one brother who's trying to take care and watch over the other brother, very much biblical brother's keeper kind of notion going on throughout. And it's also a show about how much do we pay for the sins of our fathers. And talk about a discussion we just finished in that first segment. That echoes in this show to some small degree. All right, Adam, you have watched the final episode. You've watched all 6. I've watched 5.
I have. I finished.
So we will. Yeah, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I finished it. Yeah. I thought it was, I don't know where you want to start, but I'll just say that I thought this show was stunning.
I just wanted to say before we did anything is we're going to spoil the first 5 for sure. So if you're listening and you're thinking about watching, go ahead and watch the first 5, come back, and then we won't spoil very much hardly for episode 6, the final episode. Just that's the only heads up I wanted to give.
I'll say before that spoiler goes away, the first episode, power through. Just keep going. I know that's I'm not always crazy when people tell me to do that, but I found the first episode to be probably the weakest of the bunch, and it just gets better and better.
Yeah, most first episodes are struggling with exposition and setting things up, but yeah, you're right. I think episodes 2 through 5 are mesmerizing. There, and that's a word I'd use. One thing this show had a specific tone for me, and I want to contribute that to a couple different things. Okay, I want to contribute that to, first of all, the way that it's filmed. I think, unless I'm wrong, you know, they shot this on film, didn't they?
They had to have. If they didn't, it's heavily stylized afterward. And I wish that I could find the... I actually thought to look that up a few times and didn't see anything about the specifications of how they shot it, because to me it looks like all of the pictures of our family from that era, you know, like from that early 90s kind of, it captured that mood so well. And of course it's not only living there, primarily there, but it does that thing. This is the second time we'll reference The Last Dance on the show so far, but where it reaches as far back as possible, right, in the first few episodes, and slowly moves with the brothers and kind of marches their history to catch up to the current day.
And then it does a couple it does a few flashbacks, right? It'll take you current day, and then here's some flashback type stuff that you would need to know or could add to it. And
right.
So you'll get the brothers at a very young age, you know, 10. Then you get the brothers at 18, 19, and then you get the current day brothers, where one of them has been forcefully institutionalized because, and here comes spoilers, so this is your breaking point, he chops off his hand in a library in the opening scene of the first episode.
And this show, this will be spoiler throughout, though non-specific, they do not shy away from the squeamish. You know, it's a very blood and guts and soul kind of show. You know, like you see injury, you see medical, kind of the gritty reality of an aging family or a family with problems that, you know, he's well acquainted with a hospital visit, kind of these dim, sterile situations. But yeah, I mean, right from the get-go, that hand coming off, it's rough. It's rough to watch.
The brother who's not suffering from paranoid schizophrenia, is Dominic. And Dominic is trying to keep it all together. We talked about this show a little bit. He used to be a teacher.
Right, and they barely really reference that moving mm-hmm. forward. Now he's a house painter now.
Mm-hmm. House painter, and he's divorced. And the reason why he and his wife really got to that divorce point was they had a 3-week-old baby who happened to die. Just painful to watch that episode. I think that's revealed in like episode 3, and gosh, it's so devastating. And it's not played. It borders on, you know, I think we jokingly said tragedy porn, but
yeah.
But it doesn't ever, for me, it never delved into like, this is too much, but I'm going to keep watching because I want to see what horrible thing happens next. Although it's, some people would say that, and I wouldn't disagree, but it didn't hinder me in that way.
The first episode was really the only one that was just down and out unpleasant to watch to me. I think as the cast really came into its own, as the full spectrum of character was revealed, that was alleviated because there's people around Dominic who are trying to take care of him, trying to root for him, are bright points in his life, like his ex-wife Dessa. They still have it's played by Catherine Hahn. They still have a relationship going on. Rosie O'Donnell's character, she was great in this.
So good, yeah.
So good. She was, you know, kind of became an advocate, but it also did sneaky things where this guy who has, and he kind of, we talked about in the first segment, kind of unpacking our upbringing and how that contributes to us now. You know, he has been trained, everything that was wrong with his brother, you know, quotation marks around the word wrong, early on, anything that happened, the brother showing weakness, being soft, all these things, he had to be the opposite of that to win his stepdad's approval. So he becomes this, as an adult, this like stoic guy who can be borderline arrogant. He doesn't ever want to be wrong. He has to, you know, he's fighting the system. He's constantly questioning, like, why are you being nice to me? What's your motive? You know, all these kind of things. And it's really him working through, you're not only trying to save his brother, but trying to save himself as well. That's a cheesy line, but it really ends up revolving a lot more around Dominic than it does. And it, of course, the brother, that loving relationship, but the complexity of it is front and center. But you spend a lot more time with Dominic than you do with both of them.
And it's such a sad notion that someone can't accept help and love and recognition from others because they just don't love themselves. Then that's happening a lot with Dominic. One of the other things, you know, I'm brought up that it's captured on film. It's got to be. And that does a good job of reminding us that this is the past. How much does your past and how much does your father or mother or grandfather's past affect you? What are you paying for right now in the present? I think that contributes to that, the way that it's shot on film and gives it a 1990 style of look. But another thing that this show did, which you probably notice immediately and what effect it has on you might be how you judge the show as a whole, is they do intense close-ups. Like, people are shot from, they even cut off their chin a little bit.
Yeah.
They'll cut off the chin and they'll cut off the hair, and you just get face.
Yeah.
In so many shots. And
the depth of field is often pretty shallow. So as they lean backwards and forward, say in a chair, they're coming in and out of focus, and they clearly know like their spot, right? Mm-hmm. That they should be in, but it has this very conversational like when you're listening to them talk or you're watching them react and they're kind of in and out of crisp focus. I don't know. I love that style.
Yes. And anytime a director chooses, I think this was written and directed all by the same guy, all six episodes. And when a director chooses to do something like that, that's so blatant, I like to think of why. And for me, you know, this is an internal piece. This is an internal to the point of genetics, you know.
Yeah.
How close can we get to the actors without, you know, putting the camera right up their nose?
Yeah, it's close. I thought the if we're talking aesthetics, the music was also a huge factor. I actually I knew that it wasn't because I'm a dork and I would have heard about it before the show came out, but I still Googled Daniel Lanois. I know this much is true, just to make sure that he wasn't the one doing all those moody arrangements, because it's very much in that world. And even some of the, it's more subtle than say like a Stranger Things with its over the top synth music, but like some of the choices and the instruments used or the effects used are very like of their time, but also kind of connecting to say like they wouldn't be out of place as like a transition moment on a War on Drugs record or something like that.
No, absolutely. The score was subtle for the most part. I noticed in episode 3 is when it hit me that I thought at the moment it was almost one note at a time, but it started building.
Just droned, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then episode 4 and 5 built upon that. It wasn't one note anymore. And it paired I'm going to call it strangely. It paired strangely with the voiceover that would often begin some of the episodes because here's why it was strange, because it soothed me. And for such a depressing show, that voiceover and that synth, was it a synth? Would you call it? Is that a?
Yeah, whoever did it used an Ebow a lot. Did you ever play with one of those?
Yeah, no, briefly, but I know exactly what you're talking about. Yeah.
Yeah. It's if you're not a dorky guitar player, it's like this little thing. I don't know. You hold it over your strings and it vibrates the string really, really fast and makes either kind of a low drone or a high. You can pitch it up an octave.
For those who have heard Pearl Jam's song Wish List, the solo at the end of that song, it uses an Ebow. That's the most common one I've heard.
The other example that people think was an Ebow but was not actually an Ebow but sounds very close to it is With or Without You, all the guitar stuff at the beginning that kind of whispers in.
Okay.
Similar approach.
And this one actually sounds much more synthy, much more like a synth for this show.
Yeah, yeah. I think it's because he's doing that, or she, whoever it is doing the one note kind of thing like you were talking about and letting them build on top of each other. And it just built this, like, it's beautiful, but it's tense. You know, kind of like even the aesthetics of the locations that they went to were oftentimes like something grimy would kind of be in the foreground, but they're in a beautiful river valley the whole time. You know, they go to the falls, you know.
Shot in Connecticut, right?
Yeah, right up the road from Donovan. I think he was actually the cinematographer or the consultant or something. I don't know.
Well, I think he's an extra in one of the scenes.
Yeah, they go to UConn. He was probably working at the library.
There you go. Lovely show. Lovely, even though dark and depressing. And a show about deep guilt, deep shame, and deep trauma, which is, that's not foreign to us this year. I feel like we've talked about a lot of shows that deal with these things.
Yeah, and HBO has had it's been HBO shows that have the streak of, you know, Watchmen was obviously like both personal and societal, just all the way through. I mean, even Devs, like when the tragic part happens with their daughter, when Mark Ruffalo's daughter, it made me think of Devs, that this is kind of like such a propulsive moment for everything else that happens. Such kind of like a character defining thing.
And it also is, you know, The Outsider dealt with this trauma as well. Remember, there was a death of a child in that one too. Well, you know what? We actually didn't get into a lot of spoilers, but I think I've kind of said what I want before I go into the finale. I'm going to watch it this evening, I suppose.
I know. I wish there's
any thoughts you want to share about the finale in general, broad strokes.
I thought it was beautifully done. It was, you know, we talk about landing the plane with a show like this, and I think it really, really pulled it off. I think this is one of the top things for me that's come out so far this year.
Whoa, really?
It just had such a literary quality to it. It was six episodes. The last episode is an hour and 18 minutes, so it's a little bit longer. Everything mm-hmm. else is right at 60. Mm-hmm. And it wrapped it up well. It started moving back and forth in time, like we talked about. You know, I thought of the book. You read Middlesex, right?
I did not.
Okay. It reminded me of that in some ways, that there were parallel stories happening to find out more about the main character. You know, like all of these things that say what's happening in 1990 or 91 or whatever it was has just as much bearing as, say, his grandfather's story, the mm-hmm. immigrant tale. Mm-hmm. You know? And it's really, we talked about this the first time we talked about the show, the question of who his father is, who the twins' mm-hmm. father is so central to him. And it's maybe like our desire to cling on to like a reveal like that, you know, like that as like a narrative device, we care a lot too. But as it goes on, you start to wonder like, how much does that really have to do with him, with his problems, with the twins' problems, you know?
Okay. I want to bring this up and you don't have to answer, but I saw a lot of chatter online about who Thomas and Dominic's father was. And I thought that was made fairly clear around episode 3 or 2. So you don't have to answer that, but.
Well, I'll say, you know, we mentioned it the first time that it did seem clear that his grandfather had raped his mother. Wow. Something had gone down and she carried a lot of shame through it and never told anyone, right?
Yeah,
and
I thought that was kind of made, I thought it maybe even said or alluded to heavily to the point where, why were people questioning yeah. it online?
Well, I think when he had it translated and she said, I wouldn't give this to your mom, something like that. Like, I don't know that this would be doing her a favor to give her this. His mom was on her deathbed at that point. Just let her pass. Which was a pretty bleak sentiment. And we both thought that, well, he's clearly compartmentalizing and just doesn't want to deal. He's still asking questions about it because he hasn't processed this news.
This is almost the Nelson Mandela effect. Have you heard of this? Where you think
yeah.
something happened and it's just solidified in your brain to the point where you know like that happened.
Yeah.
I'm imagining, I suppose, in episode 2 or 3 that it flat out said his grandfather is also his father via incest, you know.
I don't think it ever did flat out like that.
You go.
But both of us just took that away. But
yes, we did.
That may be a situation. Remember Game of Thrones being on the air and the joke, like, unless somebody dies on screen, mm-hmm. don't assume they're dead, that kind mm-hmm. of thing. But I think it ended up mattering to try to avoid any, a lot happens in the last episode plot wise. Yeah. Okay. And I think it was all wonderfully done. Some beautiful, beautiful moments.
Well, I'm excited.
But all of that to say, I think the process of, like, it does matter who his dad is. Both characters deserve the right to know that. But in terms of being at peace with themselves, how much of an impact is that really going to have? And that ends up being maybe the more important thing.
Of course. Okay, good. Could you do it? That's good. Good generalized summary of the final episode, which I plan on watching. So next week, we're going to be back with, we're going to have Donovan on next week, and we're going to treat it like the midpoint of the year. We're going to talk about the best and worst in pop culture. I mean, we could rattle off some things that are the worst of the year, but we're going to stick to pop culture, and we'll have Donovan on for that and Adam, and we hope you join us. Thanks for joining us today. We dealt with some heady stuff, and you know, let us know when we get things wrong, okay? And we're going to try to do our best to continue to grow, okay? Folks, you are a great audience. Subscribe to us, like on our pages, social media accounts, and that way you can stay abreast of everything that's going on. Plenty to see on thealabamatake.com, and we will check you guys out next week. Thanks for joining us.